I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Her cancer is stage four. Her surgery is postponed indefinitely, and her situation is not uncommon. If Cassandra DeMaria's procedure isn't considered urgent, what is?
Heartbreaking stories highlighting a healthcare system in crisis. The Omicron wave having a devastating ripple effect across Ontario. Good evening. The 30-year-old's operation has already been delayed twice.
As hospitals create capacity for those with COVID-19, others say they're being left behind at a moment when time is critical. CTV's John Musselman is live with more. John.
No doubt about it, Nathan, and it causes a lot of anxiety for those patients and for their families who want these procedures to go ahead.
Cassandra DeMaria is trying to save her life. The 30-year-old was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer in November 2020.
And I could have my cancer, you know, spread further. And then, you know, when it's spread, it's too late.
The Woodbridge resident has gone through 17 rounds of chemotherapy, and she was scheduled for surgery this month. But it has to be postponed because of COVID. She stopped chemo to get ready for the surgery.
I'm frustrated because I'm concerned about growth during the period that I've been off chemo. It seems as though, you know, COVID patients are kind of getting all the care right now, and we're kind of put on the back burner.
DeMaria isn't alone. Officials with the Canadian Cancer Society say almost half of all cancer patients have experienced delays or disruptions in their treatment since the pandemic began.
The patients and their caregivers feel forgotten at this time, and they're really looking for assurances that their care will be prioritized.
You know, COVID is a serious thing, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm better than anyone else, but we all deserve to get the treatment needed. If I go back on chemo and maybe a date opens up, then I can't have the surgery because now I have chemo again.
We reached out to Ontario Health Minister Christine Elliott's office for a response to this story. A spokesperson says difficult decisions have to be made. Omicron means non-urgent surgeries need to be temporarily paused to preserve critical care capacity. Quote, surgical resources are managed independently at each hospital in Ontario. As such, each institution must balance the needs of their urgent scheduled surgery patients, emergency surgery patients, and the needs of critical care patients, while also balancing the need to limit harm to patients by considering what surgeries and procedures should not be delayed. For example, bypass surgeries and most cancer surgeries.
It's been hard and scary.
DeMaria says she has no idea when her surgery will be rebooked.
And like many others, she'll have to wait for word from the hospital when she finds out when she can get this procedure done. But a lot of it will depend on what the situations are in hospitals and the acute care beds. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right. Thank you, John. Meanwhile, we're getting a glimpse at some of the challenges inside hospitals from a young woman who is getting treatment.
Sharing her feelings of isolation and confusion as both patients and staff cope with virus protocols. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Zoraida, the young woman, says the COVID-19 protocols causing her to be in isolation are taking a serious toll on her mental health because she can't leave her room. 21-year-old Jenna Bolzen is being treated in an Ontario hospital, working to regain her speech and movement after a stroke-like episode brought paralysis to her left side. Bolzen says her stay in therapies at the hospital were going well until a healthcare worker that came into her room spoke with her briefly and dropped off pills, tested positive for COVID-19, putting her into isolation since January 3rd.
Destroyed my mental health. I don't get to see anyone. I don't get to leave my room. I don't get to see outside. My window's boarded up due to construction. I don't get to shower.
Bolzen says because there is no hot water in her bathroom, she needs to use the shower room across the hall and isn't allowed to go there while in isolation. She says after 6 days, a nurse decided to help.
cried and cried and cried. And my nurse came in and she said, this is not okay. I am risking, I'm not doing this. So she risked her whole job, her whole income, and brought me to the shower room and gave me a shower because she said, I'm not letting you sit like this.
Bolzen says it's now been 7 days since that shower. Her therapy's also seriously impacted, now relegated, she says, to her room.
My therapies are down to basically nothing because they can't bring me to the gym or let me try and walk in the hallways. It's really horrible.
Bolzen says COVID-19 protocols need to change. She says she has tested negative a few times and has no symptoms, but that doesn't change her isolation status.
It breaks my heart. I'm here not just for me. I'm here for everyone, every patient out there. Like, we are all suffering severely because of these COVID protocols.
Bolzen says she hopes to get out of isolation Saturday, but doesn't know for sure if it will happen. Bolzen is staying at Peterborough Regional Health Center. We reached out to the hospital and it tells us that with all these COVID-19 protocols, it is working like all hospitals across the province to balance patient safety and care. And it cannot speak to specifics of this case, but does say that families can be in contact with the hospital to address any concerns. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Beth. The province is reporting at least 3,630 people in hospital testing positive for COVID-19. That's an increase of 182 from yesterday. The number of people in intensive care is now 500, down from 505 on Wednesday. Meanwhile, 9,909 more PCR tests have come back positive. But this is an underestimate of the true number of cases because of stricter eligibility criteria and a lack of testing resources. And more than 79,000 PCR tests remain under investigation as the province deals with a significant backlog.
54% of those hospitalizations are primarily due to COVID-19. The remaining 46% were admitted for other reasons but are now testing positive for the virus. In intensive care, 82% of patients are admitted primarily for COVID. The remaining 18% have tested positive but are being treated for another issue.
Comparing some of that data to 1 week ago, again, there are at least 3,630 people with COVID-19 in Ontario hospitals today. On January 6th, that number was 2,279. There are 500 COVID-19 patients in Ontario ICUs today. 1 week ago, there were 319.
Next to the school splintering, more boards breaking away from the province's plan as families prepare for the return of in-person classes on Monday.
And with the doors to classrooms set to reopen, we're getting a sense of when other places could do the same. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, Nathan, students next week are going to be stepping into an information vacuum, not really knowing exactly where COVID-19 is lurking in their schools or even if it's in their classroom. Now, some school boards say they are stepping up. They will be providing parents with that granular information on whether or not COVID is spreading in a classroom. With days to go until students return to the classroom, school boards are still scrambling to put together plans for the reopening.
We're trying to do the best we can under extremely tight timelines. We're hoping to get a plan out to parents as soon as possible so they know what's going on next Monday as well, to try to make sure that everyone is prepared going into Monday.
But some in the education sector are raising grave concern with the plans put together by the Ford government, which will no longer track COVID-19 in schools and instead focus on absenteeism. The Dufferin-Peel Catholic School Board wrote a letter to the Minister of Education saying the reliance on absences as a possible indicator of COVID cases among students and staff lacks the transparency of the system that has worked well and maintained public confidence throughout the pandemic. Do you believe personally that a parent deserves to know that COVID-19 is in their child's classroom?
The assumption in the question is that we're going to be testing every citizen who has symptoms. I think it's critical parents have metrics they can depend on. Parents will be able to know on the Ontario.ca website on a daily basis, absenteeism by students and by staff.
The government says that's in line with other provinces as well. But now, school boards say they're looking at ways to fill in the information gaps, giving parents a window into what's happening inside the classroom.
We do recognize that parents really want to know. And so what we are taking a look at is when there is a confirmed case that's reported to the principal, that we will let that cohort know, so that classroom know, out of courtesy, to try to make sure the parents are aware.
The government's political critics say the education confusion could have been avoided.
It is just unbelievable that here we are again, within a couple of days of the schools literally unlocking their doors to welcome students back, and everybody's in a scramble to try to figure out how to do that safely because Doug Ford didn't bother.
But once schools open, all eyes will be on the economy. Dr. Kieran Moore says with the record hospitalizations, the province needs to be cautious, and reopening too quickly could trigger another wave.
I'm looking for a plateau and a peak, and then we want to slowly and cautiously remove public health measures so that we don't have a rebound in cases coming into our hospital system.
The restrictions are slated to be lifted on January 26th. But today, Ontario's chief medical officer of health sounded hesitant.
Early in the week, we should be able to get clarity on where we're at. And as soon as we have clarity, we want to inform the business community. So I can't guarantee the 26th. Please stay tuned.
Dr. Moore says once again, it'll be a staged reopening, with large public gatherings being the last to return. And Dr. Moore says his early expectations are that Omicron's impact on hospitals will peak sometime in the last 2 weeks of January before starting to subside in Feb. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. And a reminder, our online team has a full breakdown of what families need to know ahead of next Monday. You can find that information at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Nearly 20,000 cases are considered resolved today, raising that total to more than 783,000 over the course of the pandemic. 35 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 10,480 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Straight ahead, if you live in Toronto, get ready to pay more. The pandemic price you'll see on your property tax bill. How much of an increase you can expect as the cost of living just keeps going up. But next to a family's agony, their search for answers in a fatal hit and run in Mississauga.
The victim, a newlywed who immigrated to Canada from Sri Lanka just over a decade ago. CTV's Mike Walker is live in Mississauga with more. Mike.
Well, Zoraida, Nathan, there are no words to describe the pain the family is feeling. Today, they returned to the scene of the hit and run and made an emotional appeal for the driver to turn themselves in. A grieving family, desperate for answers, lay flowers where their brother, uncle, and friend, Suresh Tharmakula Singham, was the victim of a fatal hit and run in Mississauga last month.
I don't know how to say. I miss my brother. He was a very lovely person in my...
His brother, too distraught to speak any further, the 35-year-old transport truck driver from Markham was struck by a vehicle on Dundas Street near Dixie Road just after 9 p.m. on December 17th. He died in a hospital from his injuries on Christmas Eve.
My family, they don't believe it, this happened. He's in a loss, it's a greatest loss.
Tharmakula Singham was crossing Dundas Street here after buying a coffee and was returning to his truck that he had parked at this gas station. Police say he was standing in the curb lane here when he was hit by a vehicle that didn't stop.
Whoever did it is very sad. He should stay at the moment, and at least he couldn't call to the ambulance. We could save him.
Police say the suspect vehicle is a dark colored 2008 to 2012 Ford Escape similar to this one. Investigators believe it has front end damage.
We would encourage the driver of that vehicle, the person who's responsible for this collision, to consult with a lawyer and come forward and turn themselves in to bring closure to Suresh's family.
Tharmakula Singham immigrated to Canada from Sri Lanka in 2010. He returned to Sri Lanka this past October to marry his wife. His family says he was finalizing his wife's visa application.
He's helped everybody and family also. He's a wonderful hard worker.
My uncle was a very special person for me. I don't know what I'm going to do without him.
An appeal for witnesses from police displayed on an electronic traffic sign near the scene.
Please help us.
as family and friends make an emotional call for justice.
The family or family members who is involved, please call to the police officers, surrender.
Praying the driver involved or someone who knows something will do the right thing.
Now, Peel police say they have spoken with a number of witnesses and have also obtained surveillance video from nearby businesses. But as investigators still try to identify the driver responsible, they are appealing to anyone that was in the Dixie and Dundas area back on December 17th between 9 and 9:20 p.m. or may have dash cam video to come forward. Reporting live in Mississauga, Mike Walker. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Well, there's a chance of freezing rain tonight. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, Nathan, we are looking at the potential for freezing drizzle in the area in the next little while, as we could also see some flurries and or light snow, depending on where you are in the region. So let's take a look at our satellite and radar imagery, because this is obviously a concern as we head out the roads. Temperatures very marginal, close to the zero mark. So through the Toronto area, this will be lighter in nature, but things are quite misty out there right now, and freezing drizzle possible for the next few hours before we clear out. It's light snow further to the east in the Kingston, Trenton, Prince Edward County area. Winds are shifting right now. They are light, but they are out of the north, and this signals the change that is on the way for us in terms of our temperatures and how things are going to feel in the next little while. We reached a high of 1 degree today. We'll sit at 0 degrees for the next little while, but going down to -7, feeling like -14 overnight. Zoraida?
Thank you, Michelle. He stepped away from public duties in 2019. Now Prince Andrew has been stripped of all his royal connections.
Buckingham Palace announcing the move today after a judge ruled a sexual abuse suit against the prince can proceed. CTV's Todd Battis reports.
Prince Andrew, relegated to the background of Buckingham Palace the past couple of years, has now been banished. The Duke of York's military and royal patronages have been returned to the Queen, the official statement reads.
This is really the effective end of the Duke of York's life in the working royal family.
Gone, the military titles, including three in Canada. Gone, the public duties. Gone, the salary and status.
He will effectively not be operating as a member of the royal family, will no longer use the title Royal Highness, and is clearly defending this in his capacity as a private citizen.
Andrew is fighting a civil lawsuit in the U.S. tied to the Jeffrey Epstein case. Virginia Giuffre claims the prince sexually abused her as a teenager. Yesterday, a judge in New York refused his request to have the case thrown out.
Sources close to him have said that he is determined to clear his name. If he's ever going to do that, then he's got to keep his focus on this legal battle that he is now facing.
The decision to remove Andrew from the royal ranks was made by the Queen, no doubt with input from other members such as Prince Charles and Prince William.
Prince Andrew is believed to be the Queen's favorite child, but as the public increasingly turned on him, it became apparent his role in the palace couldn't continue. Once again, illustrating while family matters, nothing, it seems, is more important than protecting the monarchy. Todd Battis, CTV News, Halifax.
And coming up, the federal flip-flop, reversing course on rules for unvaccinated Canadian truckers. Clarification on whether they'll actually be exempt from a new mandate.
It's a double murder case where any piece of new information generates a lot of interest.
The killings of Barry and Honey Sherman. It's now been 1 month since the last significant update from investigators. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott.
There are new documents unsealed by a judge. Those documents shed some light on the lengths investigators have gone to identify the man seen in a video the police made public just last month.
By last December, when Toronto police publicly released this security video of a man seen walking near the home where Barry and Honey Sherman were murdered, they had already been trying to identify him for years. Newly released documents show the lengths Toronto police had gone to identify cell phone data of hundreds of people connected to the couple in an effort to geographically link it to the man in the video. The recently unsealed documents, known as ITOs, or Information to Obtain submissions, remain heavily redacted. However, police have now released evidence photos of the Shermans' vehicles parked in both the driveway and garage of their home the night of the murders. The ITOs also reveal more information that those closest to the couple gave police, including details of their medical history and observations on the state of their relationship and finances, both personal and professional, at the time of their murder in December 2017. In her second interview with police, Honey Sherman's sister suggested the person responsible for the murders was, quote, making a statement, and that she believes the motive might have been religion, telling officers the Shermans were strong supporters of Israel, and Honey was very vocal about being Jewish. There were a lot of people of a certain ethnicity going through the house at a certain time, and Honey would use phrases that were not politically correct.
And if investigators have any idea of what they believe the motive in this case is, they have not made it public. Investigators do say, however, that since that video was released, the man walking through the neighborhood on the night of the murders, they have received several tips from the public. Live outside police headquarters, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Zarata, back to you.
Thank you, Scott. Provincial police say they are investigating a home invasion and abduction in Wasega Beach. Investigators say the incident happened at about 8:30 last night. 37-year-old Elnaz Hajtamiri was allegedly abducted from her home by three men. She's described as 5'3" with shoulder-length black hair. The suspects fled in a white SUV.
A 19-year member of the Toronto Police Service has been charged in a sexual assault investigation. The officer was identified as 47-year-old Staff Sergeant Jay Escott from 42 Division. He was arrested on one count of sexual assault. Police say the alleged incident dates back to December 2013. Escott's been suspended with pay and will appear in a Durham Region Court on February 15th.
Well, you could call it Toronto's pandemic price tag. It's a big figure in the billions, and it trickles down straight to you.
You guessed it. That means a tax hike. So what can you expect to see on your bill? CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Zarada, when the city came out with this budget, they wanted to protect city services, but they didn't want to do it on the backs of the citizens. Though that doesn't mean you will not get a tax hike. In fact, you will. The city budget for 2022 shows that the cost of living in Toronto is going up, with a 2% increase and overall price tag of $14.99 billion. City Manager Chris Murray says the rise is for two reasons.
Not just because of inflation, but because of having to make sure that we deal with the added pressures of a global pandemic.
Homeowners in the city will see a property tax rise of 2.9%. Also, the building levy will rise 1.5% for a total of 4.4%. The cost to the average household is estimated to be just over $140 this year.
We know and we appreciate that the direction of inflation is not where we want it to be.
For context, the most recent numbers from Stats Canada show an inflation rate of 4.7% from last November.
That's the strongest annual pickup in inflation from November of 2020 to November of 2021 that we've seen since the early 1990s. You've got to go way back to find a rate of inflation that is as high as we're experiencing right now.
Business tax increases will be more modest, with 1.45% for commercial and 0.97% for industrial. Property tax will account for the largest source of revenue for the city at over 35%, while transfers from federal and provincial governments are just over 31%. Land transfer taxes and transit fares come in at just over 7 and 6% respectively, while transit is the most expensive service with a budget of over $2 billion.
The key guiding principle for us is one, to address COVID, and two, to preserve city services.
While the city has been investing in services like Cafe TO and Active TO to help during COVID, revenue from ridership on the TTC has fallen from once covering two-thirds of the budget to covering just one-third of the budget last year. The city's requesting additional relief from the federal and provincial governments of $1.4 billion. And one point on that inflation number they came up with. Now, it was 2.9%, they said, because they use an average of 12 months. But as you heard, inflation has been going up. And if it continues to do so and it sticks around, it could mean a larger tax hike next year. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Less than 24 hours ago, unvaccinated Canadian truckers were told they'd receive an exemption under the new federal vaccine mandate.
But CTV News has learned Ottawa is reverting back to its original rules for those drivers. CTV's Annie Bergeron-Oliver has the details.
After an abrupt about-face yesterday that caused confusion, the federal government is making another change to its position on the entry of unvaccinated Canadian truckers. Starting Saturday, the government says unvaccinated Canadian drivers will need to quarantine, get a PCR test within 72 hours of arrival in Canada, and take another test on day 8 of their quarantine. Unvaccinated foreign drivers will still be turned away at the border.
Truck drivers deliver medical gases to hospitals. The vaccines that we need, our medicines, our food, our fuel. And we already have a fractured supply chain. And if we damage that, the supplies that we need for our own health and safety, we're going to see a shortage.
The reversal comes less than 24 hours after the Canada Border Services Agency said Canadian drivers would be exempt from a quarantine requirement for all unvaccinated drivers, first announced in mid-November.
Last night, there was an error made. Today, we've obviously clarified the policy position, and the policy position stands.
Industry stakeholders estimate roughly 10% of Canada's 120,000 truck drivers are unvaccinated, and they say the vaccine mandate threatens to hurt an industry already short roughly 22,900 jobs.
With about $1.5 billion a day of transportation across the borders, and because our industrial sectors are so integrated between Canada and the U.S., what it means is potential things out of stock on the shelves.
The next challenge for the cross-border trucking industry comes on January 22nd. That's when a new American requirement for foreign truckers, including Canadians, to show proof of vaccination to enter the country comes into effect. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Ottawa.
Rapid COVID-19 tests were handed out at Fairview Mall this morning, the only distribution organized by the province in the GTA today. The lineup began long before tests were first handed out at 9 a.m., and sure enough, supply had run out by about 10:30. The Ford government has said it is waiting for more kits from the federal government.
And lineups of a different kind continued outside of vaccination clinics today, including this one at Cliffside Public School in Scarborough. It was one of two organized by Michael Guerin Hospital and East Toronto Health Partners. First and second doses were offered for kids age 5 to 11 before the return to school. Third doses were available for adults in designated postal codes.
Across the province, 87.9% of eligible people aged 5 and older have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. 82.1% of eligible people are deemed fully vaccinated. In Ontario, that is still considered two shots. And in total, more than 5 million people in this province have received a third dose.
In Saskatchewan, the premier is self-isolating tonight after announcing he has COVID-19. Scott Moe returned a positive result from a rapid test. He says he's feeling fine, but will work from home for the next 5 days.
COVID-19 vaccines are still desperately needed in many countries, and that makes this next story even more troubling. We learned today that poorer nations were forced to reject more than 100 million doses last month. UNICEF says that's mainly because they were delivered with a rapid expiry date. The vaccines were distributed by COVAX, which is nearing delivery of close to 1 billion doses to nearly 150 countries. Poorer nations have also been forced to delay supplies due to insufficient storage facilities, including a lack of fridges.
In the U.S., the Biden administration is doubling the number of COVID-19 tests that will be distributed nationwide to 1 billion as part of a more aggressive approach to fight the Omicron variant.
Next week, we'll announce how we are making high-quality masks available to American people, the American people, for free.
Also starting next week, Biden says 1,000 military medical personnel will be deployed to hospitals that are struggling to cope with staffing crunches.
British police have no plans to investigate lockdown gatherings at the Prime Minister's official residence, but they might if a government inquiry finds evidence of potential criminal offences. Boris Johnson apologised this week after admitting he attended a staff garden party at 10 Downing Street in May of 2020. It occurred as the public was being told to limit contact with others. The PM says he thought it was a work event. There are calls for Johnson's resignation, but so far senior members of the party are standing by him.
He could be in for a lukewarm reception. Novak Djokovic was officially declared the top seed at the Australian Open today, but he still may not even get a chance to defend his title.
The vast majority of Australians said didn't like the idea that another individual, whether they're a tennis player or the King of Spain or the Queen of England, can come up here and have a different set of rules to what everybody else has to deal with.
The world number one was back on the practice court today. Australia's immigration minister is still deciding whether to cancel his visa. The government is troubled that Djokovic received a medical exemption, which would allow the unvaccinated star to play.
The Olympics begin 3 weeks tomorrow, and China is battling multiple COVID-19 outbreaks in at least six cities. Beijing is doubling down on its zero COVID policy, imposing tighter restrictions. The host city is implementing an even stricter bubble than Tokyo did for the Summer Games. Across the country, more than 20 million people are living under some form of lockdown. Many are prevented from leaving their homes at all.
In India, authorities are trying a novel approach to limit the spread of the virus. Drones are being used to sprinkle water from the Ganges River on religious followers. The holy baths are being provided as thousands of people gather ahead of a Hindu festival in West Bengal. It's expected to attract almost 1 million visitors. For many, taking a dip in the river is an important part of the celebration.
Coming up, one of Toronto's most familiar skyscrapers sold, the major fashion brand behind the billion-dollar deal.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, supply chain issues are causing delays if you need auto parts to fix your car. If your vehicle is in an accident, instead of weeks, it could take months to have it repaired. And that means you could be on the hook for a rental. I'll explain why. That story is just ahead.
Temperatures are going down through the overnight. We'll reach a low of -7, feeling like -14 with the wind chill. And we're staying cold tomorrow, briefly up to -6 tomorrow. And then temperatures continue to slide downwards, reaching around -20 as we get into Saturday morning. But if you've been looking for some sunshine, tomorrow's for you. We'll see some clearing and lots of sun into the weekend. I'll have your full 7-day forecast coming up very soon. Stay with us.
It started with a microchip shortage, but now there are many auto parts on back order because of supply chain issues.
That means if your car is in an accident, instead of it being repaired within weeks, it could actually take months for the parts to arrive. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Sarita and Nathan, someone crashed into a Mississauga man's SUV in November. His insurance company gave him a rental car while it was being repaired, but he was only allowed the rental for 16 days, even though it could take 3 months to fix his vehicle.
It's costing me money, most definitely, and it's not money I want to spend.
Don Lewis of Mississauga says it was late November when another driver smashed into his Volvo SUV. The vehicle was taken to a repair shop, but he was told due to supply chain issues, it wouldn't be repaired until early to mid-February.
They just can't seem to get the parts.
Lewis was relieved he had coverage for a rental through his car insurance and was given a rental car. But after 16 days, he was told he had to return it.
They will pay for a vehicle while my car is being repaired or replaced, or for $900, whatever comes first.
Lewis now has to pay for the rental car himself and says by the time his SUV is repaired, he'll have to pay almost $3,000 in rental fees.
The rental car is sitting in my driveway and it's costing close to $60 a day with tax.
Lewis is insured with Allstate. The company said the global economy is experiencing supply chain issues, which is impacting the availability of auto parts. A spokesperson said, our customer was provided with a rental vehicle for the full period under his automobile insurance policy, and his claim will be paid in accordance with his coverage. CTV News also reached out to Volvo Canada, and a spokesperson said, we will continue to work diligently to ensure spare parts are united with our clients in a rapid and efficient manner. Lewis just told us his repairs were fast-tracked and he should now get his SUV tomorrow, saving him thousands in rental fees.
You saved me probably close to $3,000 by having them find the part. I really appreciate it and I thank you.
And it's not just cars that have been in accidents waiting for parts. Some items like filters, brake pads, and engine components are also hard to come by. And because there is a shortage, they're also increasing in price. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, it was another mild day today, but that's about to change.
Yeah, I'm thinking tomorrow time for the full snowsuit. for tomorrow and for Saturday, Michelle.
Not a bad idea. Definitely, as we get Friday into Saturday, you're going to want to bundle up because, yes, as you mentioned, things are changing in terms of our temperature. After the last couple of mild days, we're about to plunge into below seasonal territory. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So let's take a look at how things will play out in the next little while, because first we have a little bit of potentially freezing drizzle to deal with through much of the region as we get through the evening. And then that's going to change as we get into the overnight period. And, you know, the temperature's part of that reason. We're marginal temperatures close to the zero mark throughout the region. We're at zero in Toronto right now. Not much of a wind chill today. That's because winds have been light. That's going to change again as we get through the overnight period. So what we're looking at in terms of our overnight low, and this is interesting because we're going to stay close to this through much of the morning, and we might bump up a little bit, but we're going to stay on the colder side. -7 in the city of Toronto, and this is a change that's happening from northwest to southeast. As a front moves through, our sky will clear out and we will cool down significantly. We're already seeing the wind shift out of the north to herald that change. What we're looking at on satellite radar imagery is not a lot, but again, it's misty out there, it's overcast. We're looking at the potential for some flurries and or some freezing drizzle mixed in the GTA. If you're in the Niagara region, a little bit more of that activity for you. And also in the eastern end of Lake Ontario, Trenton, Kingston, Belleville, Prince Edward County, seeing a little bit more flurry activity there. Also, you could see this in Windsor as we get into the late overnight into the early morning. So putting everything in motion, this is what we're waiting for. Here's the front sweeping through. And you'll know when that happens. The sky will clear out, the winds will pick up out of the north, and it's going to get a lot colder, and we're going to stay in this colder air mass as we get through the weekend. High pressure in place, though, giving us lots of sunshine. Another system on the way, though, will change things up a little bit for Monday. There is an extreme cold warning in place for some parts of southern Ontario, Parry Sound extending over just shy of Bancroft, and this is where we'll see wind chill values, this including Muskoka region, hitting close to the minus 40 mark through the overnight period and early in the morning tomorrow, and staying that way. And this is a look at tomorrow's highs. We'll very briefly be at -6 in the city of Toronto. It's going to feel like -13, -14. Not a lot to show you on radar and satellite imagery or in the forecast because we're getting clearing skies as we get in the next little while. Just a little bit of cloud cover, but you really saw how things cleared out in terms of our sky conditions as we get overnight and into tomorrow. We'll see continued clearing tomorrow, that -6, and then down to -21, feeling close to -30, 31. Early Saturday morning, a high of just -10 on Saturday. Very cold Saturday night. Sunday, still below seasonal. Accumulating snow on the way Sunday night into Monday. So keep that in mind. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Also tonight, the new music video for Shawn Mendes' breakup single has him sad in the six, but fans are thrilled about the familiar backdrop.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
The pandemic has been a time of change on so many fronts, but new statistics released today show one very important thing has stayed the same.
The province has updated the list of most popular baby names across Ontario, and some familiar entries are once again on top. Looking at stats from 2020, Olivia was the most popular girl's name for the 11th year in a row. It was followed by Charlotte, Emma, Amelia, and Sophia. On the boys' side, Noah was the top name for the second year in a row, followed closely behind by Liam, Benjamin, and Oliver. Jack rounded out the top five. You can find the full list of top names on our website.
Some exciting news for Degrassi fans tonight. A new version of the beloved teen drama is on the way. HBO Max announced today that it's creating a new teen and family series of the same name. Like previous reimaginings, the new Degrassi will be set in Toronto. It's being produced by Canadian company Wild Brain with a scheduled release in 2023.
Paramount Pictures has announced plans to mark a major anniversary for The Godfather.
Freedom, you're my older brother and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again. Ever.
Believe it or not, the cinema classic was first released 50 years ago this March. Paramount says the Academy Award winner will be back in theaters for a limited time to mark the occasion. All three films in the Godfather trilogy have been restored for 4K under the guidance of director Francis Ford Coppola, with plans for a home release.
As the world mourns Bob Saget, singer John Mayer and comedian Jeff Ross went to pick up his car from the Los Angeles airport this week. The two men filmed the journey and shared memories of their late friend.
He made me laugh. He made me feel like I belong. He made me feel made as a comedian. He loved comedians.
As soon as he left, people realized, oh my God, that's 100% sincere love for a guy. And I think that's why so many people are sideways.
Mayer and Ross remembered the Full House star as a caring person who is beloved by many in return. Bob Saget died on Sunday at the age of 65. The cause of death has yet to be announced.
The full list of performers for this year's Coachella Music Festival is now out. Harry Styles has been named the headliner for the two Friday night shows. And as we reported last week, Billie Eilish is the main performer for Saturday nights on the two weekends in April. And Kanye West is the Sunday headliner. Dozens of other artists are slated to perform. Coachella says the first weekend is already sold out.
A new music video from Shawn Mendes dropped at noon today, and the backdrop will look very familiar to local fans.
I'll make it.
The song is called It'll Be Okay. Mendes released it after his breakup with Camila Cabello in November. The two singers say they are still best friends. The video follows Mendes on a snowy walk. Mendes says it was filmed at home in Toronto.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Men's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
It's been hard. And scary.
Updating our top stories, with many hospital procedures delayed once again because of COVID, cancer patients are speaking out. Advocates say they need clarity on when they'll get the care they need. The province says difficult decisions have been made to preserve critical care space, but hospitals manage their own surgery resources.
We will let that cohort know, so that classroom know, that is out of courtesy.
School boards are announcing their own plans to notify families of COVID-19 cases in their children's classrooms. The province will shift to reporting absentee rates among students and staff, saying that's in line with other provinces. Critics say more should have been done sooner to make sure schools could reopen safely.
It will be a difficult January, but the sacrifices you are making now means a better February and then a better March.
And the province's top doctor says he can't guarantee the current COVID-19 restrictions will be lifted as scheduled on January 26th. Businesses have been calling for guidance on that front. Officials say they don't want to ease the rules too quickly and risk a rebound in cases.
And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 9 basis points to 79.89 U.S. American benchmark oil dropped 52 cents a barrel to close at 82.12. And the TSX Composite Index lost 102 points to close at 21,293.
A new report from Scotiabank is highlighting just how serious Canada's housing shortage is, and Ontario is doing worse than the rest of the country. The analysis looked at data from 2020. It found Ontario was far below other provinces when it came to the average number of housing units available per capita. 650,000 homes would need to be built to make up for the deficit. Nearly twice that amount would be needed to reach the G7 average. The report suggests home prices will keep rising until a better balance between needs and availability is found.
One of the most recognizable buildings in the city's financial district has just been sold. Spanish billionaire and Zara founder Amancio Ortega has agreed to buy Royal Bank Plaza for a sum of $1.2 billion. The skyscraper was first built in the late 1970s, and it covers some 1.5 million square feet across two towers. The current owners are Oxford Properties and the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. They began looking for a potential buyer back in September.
The federal government is pulling a U-turn on its rules for unvaccinated Canadian truck drivers.
And that is the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're now joined by Chanel Call and Beatrice Vaisman. So, Beatrice, you're hearing from the Ontario Trucking Association tonight.
We are, Zoraida. And look, this is either a policy flip-flop or a major communications nightmare, or both, to be quite frank, because despite what the Canada Border Services agencies told us yesterday, the federal government today announcing that, in fact, Canadian unvaccinated truckers will have to quarantine upon arrival. The fears are certainly that this could sideline thousands of truck drivers, exacerbate a trucker shortage, and cause major disruption to the food supply chain. So we'll have reaction on CP24 tonight.
And Chanel, you'll also be speaking with one school board that has major concerns for the education minister.
That's right. The Dufferin-Peel Catholic District School Board wrote a letter to Minister Lecce's office today. They say they're concerned about a lack of transparency, about a lack of consultation, and also the fact that the province moving forward starting Monday will not be recording and reporting COVID-19 cases in schools. So we'll hear from the head of that board about how they're preparing for a return to school on Monday, despite those concerns and challenges coming up.
All right. Thanks, Chanel and Beatrice. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. SpaceX is making this look easy. In Florida today, the company completed another successful launch of its Falcon 9 rocket.
Ignition and liftoff.
Transporter 3 lifted off from Cape Canaveral just before 10:30 this morning. It delivered 105 small satellites into low Earth orbit for several companies. The rideshare mission allows for smaller customers to split the costs. After main engine cutoff and separation, the booster rocket returned, touching down on a landing pad. It's the 10th time SpaceX has successfully done that, allowing the rocket to be reused.
Okay, Michelle, looking forward to the sunshine tomorrow, but there's a trade-off.
There is absolutely a trade-off. We're 0 degrees right now. We're going to be -7 overnight. The warmest we'll get tomorrow when we get that clearing is -6, down to -21 overnight Friday into Saturday. It's going to feel like -30 when you wake up on Saturday, and then a high of just -10. Lots of sunshine, though, but very cold again overnight into Sunday. Watch out for a significant storm moving in Sunday night into Monday. This will impact very likely your Monday morning commute. We're looking at accumulating snowfall. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
In the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day long on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
We'll see you at 11:30.